Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome back to Roberta's Radio. It's me, Jack Inslee, reminding you this show does go down every single Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you like this program, it's archived on heritageradionetwork.org, available for free as a podcast on iTunes and anywhere else you might find podcasts. So this week is not Falco Talk. This week is not Chef Eric and the crew. This is a return to our hospitality-themed content with none other than Greg Goldman and Aaron Arispe in the studio right now. So I'm going to hand it over to you guys. Welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Episode number two for you guys on the show, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
The unfunny Roberta's Radio.
Yeah, we can't compete with Falco or Eric, but we will.
I mean, I can just play air horns every now and again if you need.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that. Awesome. So I think you guys have a caller on the line as well.
Great.
Maybe you want to introduce them. Well, first, why don't you introduce yourselves for people that are maybe tuning in for the first time with you guys?
Sure. We have another guest here in the studio with us. It's my friend Kevin Lind. He can tell you what he does. He works with 11 Madison Park. But
hey, everyone. My name is Kevin Lind, as you said. Yeah, and I'm a dining room manager over at 11 Madison Park. I've been with Made Nice for a couple of years now, and Aaron just off the cuff asked me to come this evening. So here I am.
Long-time Roberta's regular as well.
Oh, God. I have a seat at the bar. I don't know what number it is, but everyone's closest to the TV. I feel like I'm at home.
It's a part-time job.
67.
And I'm Greg Goldman. I'm the general manager at Roberta's currently. And, yeah, we have Aaron Silverman on the line, I believe.
Yeah, Rose's I'm here. Luxury. Hey, guys.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, bud.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. A little hard to hear you, but I think I got it. I'm good.
Cool.
Good. You're at Roberta's. It's hard to hear. You're right in the thick of it. Well, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So if you could just, you know, summarize kind of what you're doing down in DC and tell listeners what's up down there, because we're all curious about what you're doing, and hopefully you can lead into this this hospitality show that we're doing today.
Sure, sure. I mean, aside from running around with our heads cut off every day. Yeah, we opened up about a year and almost a year and a half ago, and we've been doing pretty well. We started with about 27 employees, and we're now up to about 54. We had I don't know what you call it, casual restaurant, like it no reservations, about 60 seats, small plates, a couple turns a night, pretty standard stuff. But we've been trying to take care of our staff a little extra well here. It was one of our principles when we opened. The whole idea was that if we had awesome staff, if we took care of our staff awesome, they would take care of our guests awesomely, and that would just create continuous business for us. So since we've opened, we've pretty much had lines out the door from, I mean, we have a line that starts anywhere from 3 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And at 5:30 we open, and then we're pretty much full every night until closing, and that's Monday through Saturday. So I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what we're doing, but it seems to be working.
Well, I was actually curious, what are you doing to really appeal to staff to stick around and to make them feel appreciated for working there?
I mean, the first thing is we hired staff that we were really picky about who we hired. We hired people that we wanted to hang out with every day. So I think that was like the first thing, was figuring out, finding people that we'd enjoy working with every day and people that would enjoy working with us every day. And I think that goes a long way to keeping the staff happy. I mean, obviously, if you're working with people you don't like, then things aren't going to go so well. So that was like the first thing for us. And basically, we actually opened super understaffed. We had to keep a couple sections of the restaurant not open, part of the bar area, the kitchen counter, a couple other places, because we didn't have enough servers or bussers or a bunch of things. But we just waited until we found the people that we really wanted. And it didn't take too long. And then since then, we've just attracted more and more awesome people. So, I mean, that was like the beginning of what we were doing. But nowadays, you know, some of the things we do, like the more tangible stuff, you know, paying our staff well. We provide full medical, dental, and health for all of our employees. So free of charge, they don't have to pay for anything. I mean, simple things sometimes, like we don't do lunch, we don't do brunch, we're not open on Sundays. And that's something that'll never change here. And it sounds silly, but obviously we all work enough hours. Mm-hmm. It's important. I mean, it's for quality of life. Trying to think what else we do. I mean, we pay for all of our overtime. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's unfortunately like it's not true these days. But every hour that you're in the building, you get paid yep. for it, and you get paid. If you're over 40, you get paid for it. So, I mean, you'd be surprised. Well, you guys wouldn't be surprised, right. But a lot of people would be surprised.
No, I'm sure a lot of people would. It's funny you say tangible things, because it is like this abstract offering to make an environment for employees like appealing and wanting them, making them want to come to work every day and get excited about it. It's not an easy thing to describe, you know, to articulate that. It's hard. So it's funny that you brought it up like that. But I know Aaron and Kevin have worked for places for a long time and kind of have their own reasons for what they do. Why are you in this business even in general? I just want to kind of get like a little bit more background on where you come from and what you're doing.
Sure. I mean, those are obviously just the tangible ways. I think the less tangible ways are probably the more important ones. And the reasons why our staff stays around more so. And why we have great staff. But I mean, I actually got into cooking because I hated accounting. I was studying accounting and political science, and I was bored and miserable by it. And I got into cooking, and I loved cooking. But then what I found out afterwards was that I had another passion, which was people, and I really enjoyed the restaurant business, like being around all those people every day, and making people happy. And it's kind of selfish, but I get a lot of pleasure out of that. So that's kind of why I do this every day. I really enjoy making people happy. I mean, my cooks, our servers, our managers, our guests, everybody. I mean, the mailman comes in and everybody says hello to him. It's nice to be in a positive environment every day. That's kind of, even more than happiness, is just positivity and like trying to be in a positive environment every day. It's just a much better life than being stressed out and, well, I don't know, I guess we're still stressed out, but being miserable all the time. So.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about what you do with the success that you guys have already attained, in the sense that you can take your crazy popularity and do good with it, or you can take your popularity and kind of, turn into a restaurant that people don't want to work at anymore? And can you talk a little bit about the World Food Program thing?
Sure. I mean, that's mostly, you know, due to the success that we've had. The most obvious and immediate benefit is making a lot of money. And, you know, the busier you are, the more you have to pay for it. But we do pretty well. So it's allowed us to do a lot of things for our staff. And, we actually have an extra cook, an extra sous chef, and an extra front of house manager, which is kind of ridiculous. But we brought an extra person on staff because I don't think anyone's ever worked in a restaurant that is, quote unquote, fully staffed. You're always short. So that means someone's always working 6 days. Someone's always picking up, or even 7 days sometimes. And we realized that was like a consistent problem. So we said, you know what? Let's hire an extra manager, an extra cook, an extra sous chef, an extra whatever. And that way we're always covered and nobody ever has to work 6 days. So, you know, and normally you can't afford that, but due to our popularity, we've been busy. We can afford that. So all my managers, many of them who have wives or husbands or kids, they get a lot of free time at home, or more than most in restaurants. So that's one thing right off the bat that our popularity and success has allowed us to do. I mean, we do a bunch of other little things, like we pay anyone who wants to take the SOM or first or second or whatever master song class we pay for. You know, we do gift cards for the staff and retreats, and you know, some of our managers are going to be taking on ownership in the near future, and I'm trying to think what else. Today, all my cooks are working on projects. I handed out new cards the other day for them to all work on something. So we just buy ingredients for them to play with, so to keep them stimulated and entertained. And I mean, that's why they're here. They're here to learn. So letting them actually do stuff besides just cooking the same thing every day it's important. So
yeah, I mean, it seems like it's setting you guys up for that inevitable turnover. I mean, no matter how great the place is, restaurant business is not forever. So it's kind of sounds like you have that in your back pocket a little bit, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, our turnover has been extremely low, but at the same time, sometimes, you know, we want our people to grow, and keeping them here forever is not the goal. Some people, I mean, you want some people who have a lot to learn to be here for a couple of years, but there's others who, after a year, we're like, you need to go. You need to get out. As much as we want to keep you, and it sucks to lose you, like, you need to go somewhere else and learn. And it's fine, because it's good for them, and in the end, we gain somebody new and someone new to teach. So it's, as long as turnover is not a problem, as long as it's for the right reasons.
That makes a lot of sense. You want to talk a little bit about the World Food Program that you guys are donating to a little bit?
Sure. So we donate to the World Food Program, specifically the USA department, but it's actually kind of funny. So for every guest that dines here, we donate a quarter to the World Food Program, which basically provides rations for a child in school and rations for one meal and rations to take home. So I think for like 5 cents, you feed some like rice or something, but for 25 cents, you can actually feed an entire meal. So for every guest that dines here, we donate 25 cents. So it turns out to about, I don't know, about $1,000 a month. It's on our website right now. I actually don't remember exactly how many, but it's a lot. And we donate about 4,000 meals a month. So it's really easy to do. And you can only imagine if every restaurant did that, like, childhood hunger in like America would be solved. But it'd be nice if other people followed suit. But anyways, what's really funny is the story about how that came about, where I was sitting at a friend's house, I think New Year's Day, pretty trying to recover. And somebody threw me like a 5-hour energy, and it was actually, I think it was 50 cents new like energy drink. And it said, we donate 5 cents of every bottle sold. And I was like, oh, man, that's a great idea. So they actually donated to WFP, the World Food Program. So I threw it in my pocket, and actually it sat at that little bottle sat in my car for like 2 years. And when the restaurant finally opened, I called them, and I was like, hey, I want to do this. So I actually have 50 cents to thank for that.
That's awesome. Cool, man. What else we got? We got a nice little topic today that we're discussing and want you to kind of chime in on.
Sure.
We're just curious about different experiences that we all have when we all go out to eat, being in the restaurant industry. So, like, really when the service industry, dining out and drinking out, and what happens when, you know, the staff becomes the customer. I know you know, you've been pretty busy and you're a chef, and like most of us, don't get a ton of opportunities to eat out, but do you want to talk about that a little bit? Do you enjoy eating out? Does doing what you do kind of ruin or change your experience a little bit?
I don't know. I do enjoy eating out. I actually don't get out much. I mean, we're still a baby. You know, a year and a half is not is not a very mature restaurant. We're still super young, so I'm here quite a bit. And now we're silly us working on our second restaurant right next door. So. as soon as we started to get some free time, we figured, what the hell, why not jump into it again? But, no, I mean, eating out, I don't know. I don't get to do it very often, so it's hard for me to speak to that. But I know our staff eats here a lot. They eat out a lot, and they eat here a lot. And, it's really nice to take care of your own people, especially when they're dining in your own restaurant. But, I don't know. Yeah. For me, I prefer, like, not being seen anywhere and just hiding in like a little taco shop somewhere or a little ramen shop where no one knows me. But But yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know if that answers your question, really.
No,
I probably didn't do a good job on that.
It's all good. It's just, you know, I'm like wondering, I've been asking a lot of the staff here at Roberta's throughout the week, kind of what they think. It just seems like the older you get, the more jaded you get, and the less you want to be known when you go out. And a lot of the younger kids here have been like, yeah, it's great. I love it when they know I'm in the industry. A lot of the chefs were talking about, like, not wanting to eat at places with open kitchens. Like, they don't want to see inside of their life while they're eating.
Yeah, I try and sit at, like, the corner of the bar and hide a little bit. But yeah, because you just want to enjoy your meal. You just want to get, you know, you just want to have a normal experience. So,
right. Totally. Does your staff come in and dine at Rosa's Luxury very often?
They do. We do retreats every couple months here, whether it's we closed for the Hollinitz concert last year. And then we do an orientation annually. And whenever we close, we hand out, you know, $100 gift cards to the staff so they can come in and dine on top of, you know, whatever discount they get. The employee discount, but they come in quite a bit. It's, you know, the first time any employee dines here from our staff, we count their entire meal, which they don't generally know about, but until afterwards. But then from then on, they get their discount and then usually have gift cards. And it's important. I mean, we do it so that they stay passionate and involved. And it's hard when you're working in the same environment every day to appreciate what the quality of what you're doing and that it's actually pretty good. All you see is the problem. So when they get to come in and dine and enjoy themselves, it makes them appreciate more what we do. But on the other hand, it also allows them to just have a good time. And they usually bring family or obviously family or friends. But, yeah, I think we have two of our employees dining here tonight. So, yeah, it's pretty fun. We get to take care of them, and it's nice. It's a little way to pay them back.
There was something I was reading yesterday here. I think it was in the New York Magazine website or something, and it was Andy Ricker from Pock Pock talking about how New York State raised minimum wage for tipped employees from $5 to $7.50, so a full 50% raise.
Really?
And some of that it's something that restaurant owners have to enact by the end of the year.
It's the tip credit. So it's not minimum wage. It would be the tip credit minimum wage.
Change the hourly to $7.50. And he was talking about some of the adverse effects that would have, and how they'd have to raise the prices, or you know, you'd be paying $24 for a mixed greens salad and things like that. And I think the way that every restaurant allocates its finances is going to vary drastically. And the conversation, of course, about the disparity between back of house and front of house is a whole other show. But can you talk a little bit about how, I mean, you guys aren't swimming in money. I know you're a very popular restaurant, but the profit margins in restaurant industry are always relatively low. And I think, as a business owner, you make a choice of how you're going to distribute that and keep it fair for your staff and keep your staff, in a state where they want to keep working for you. Can you talk a bit about how you guys do that there?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, even being super busy, it's still a restaurant. You're never swimming in money. That just doesn't happen. And it can slip away very easily between labor and food costs and things like that. But, you know, it was really important to me to give the staff insurance and pay them higher rates than most in the city. And that was just something we decided from the beginning. So we have responsibilities to investors too. You know, they invested money and they expect a return on that. So we made sure that when we talked to our investor or we looked for investors, we told them, we gave them accurate projections that had already included health insurance taken out and good pay for employees, because that's how I wanted to spend our money. And A, making our staff happy because I enjoy doing that, but B, it's good for business. So in the end, I feel like we're trading profits today in order to survive for 20 years. You know, we have a 20-year lease on this restaurant, so we've got 18 and a half years left. I prefer to reinvest our money into our staff, and whether that's investing in equipment for the building for our staff, whatever it is, that keeps people around. And obviously, low turnover is good for the bottom line, and The happier the staff is, the happier the guests are. The happier the guests are, the more they're going to come back. And I think the bottom line for us, when I first opened, one of my biggest goals was not, I wasn't too worried about price. I mean, we needed to hit some basic margin numbers, but my biggest goal was how I asked myself every day, how do we stay busy from 5 to 10? Like 5 to 10, because everybody can be busy from 7 to 9, or a lot of places can be busy from 7 to 9. But where you can really do well and afford the extra luxuries is when you're busy at 5 o'clock and at 10 o'clock. So we said we're going to do the absolute best food we can do at the absolute cheapest price we can do it and provide the absolute best service we can. And I said, then the next question was, how do you do that? And why do people go out to eat? And people go out to eat to have a good time. So that's where we came up with kind of the idea that we are in the, you know, making people happy business as opposed to cooking business or service industry or whatever you want to call it. And people are coming in for an experience. So kind of getting away from your point about about funds and finances, but I mean, that's why we are able to do a lot of things we do. It's because we're busy at 5 and 10. And we're busy at 5 and 10 because we make people happy. So,
yeah, I think none of us are in it for the funds and finance element of it anyway. And also, I mean, the words you're saying now echo a lot of what we were talking about with Mark Canlis in the last episode on this that Greg and I did. Very similar message in terms of what a business actually is and what its goals should be.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Kevin, I haven't chimed in yet. I just wanted to ask a question, actually, which is just down this vein. You changed careers pretty early on, and I think, I mean, I definitely changed careers to enter the restaurant industry myself, and I know a lot of people who did. And you're talking about this culture in your restaurant of just, like, fun and having a nice time. How did you answer questions initially when you chose to change careers? And then also, how do you answer questions now about keeping your staff and yourself inspired to be in this industry when so many people have a tendency to question it?
Who's that question for? Sorry. Yeah,
that's for you. Confused. That's for you.
Okay. Just making sure. I didn't
know.
Sorry.
a lot of errands so, here.
Yeah, errands around.
True.
I got you. The first question was, how do you answer questions about making people happy based on... Sorry, one more time?
Well, the first question was, like, when you chose to change careers, like, how did... I'm sure there was a certain amount of backlash, whether or not it was familial or from your peers or whatever else. And how did you choose to answer that question? And then the second question was about how do you keep your staff inspired?
I got lucky. I had a lot of support when I decided to change careers. I mean, I wasn't quite into a full career. I was in undergrad and I went to one of the co-op schools where you work for 6 months, you go to school for 6 months. So I was doing accounting for Gillette and auditing for Deloitte & Touche. And I decided, you know, it's a five-year program. I decided 4 years in I wanted to cook, and I was going to do that. So I finished up school early and got out and, you know, doubled up on credits the last semester. And my friends and family supported me, which was great. And thank God, I don't think any of us ever thought we'd get to this point. My parents included, but, it was really no option, but to succeed. Like failing was not an option. And I had no idea what I was going to do. I didn't know if I was going to open a restaurant. I just knew I really enjoyed cooking and that I really just wanted to be happy with doing something every day. And that's what brought happiness, not money. So, you know, primarily. So, I had plenty of support there. It was not a difficult situation for me. I was fortunate. Sorry, what was the other part of your question? One more. I apologize.
No problem. And then the other part was, how do you like keep that drive alive in your staff? You know, it's like sometimes difficult. Some people come into this industry to make ends meet. Some people do it for whatever reasons that they do, and making sure that people are like career driven or have the same passion that you do in your environment, how do you keep that alive?
I mean, we're lucky. We have a great business here where people enjoy working with each other here. They get to learn a lot here. We're continuously busy. It's exciting. I mean, this is definitely a unique restaurant, and we hit the jackpot a little bit. And so it makes it very easy to keep staff inspired and excited and happy to come to work every day. It's a snowball effect. And while we are lucky, I think you do create some of your own luck, and setting yourself up for success from the beginning. We were actually talking about it the other day, and someone was asking me, how did you manage to end up with 54 employees that are all awesome? Because, I mean, everyone here, like, I just wish I had more time to hang out with everyone here because they're so freaking cool. But it happened from the first hire. It was the first person I hired. Our opening manager was the first employee we hired. Our opening manager got a buddy named Costa that I went to high school with, and he was actually out of the restaurant industry, and I pulled him back into it. But he is the single happiest, greatest front of the house employee I've ever met. Is he all he cares about is making people happy. That's it. Just happens to be his personality, and for me that was kind of inspiring. And I thought, if there's one other person that I could bring into this, it would be him. And if me and him would go out and find two more people like us, then the four of us would find eight more like us. And that's kind of how this whole thing has happened. And now it's snowballed into a point where we have somewhat of a reputation for that. So people just come knocking on our door, and you know, it all started with the first person and the way me and him think.
Sweet, man. We really, really appreciate your time. For anybody listening, which is probably my mom and their girlfriends and my wife. For all those listeners, definitely check out Rose's Luxury in Washington, D.C. It's an incredible restaurant. And as we heard, it just has an incredible spirit to it. We're going to head into a break right now.
Thanks, man.
But thank you again.
Thanks so much.
And for a quick minute or two, you're listening to some musical selections from our very own music director, Kristen Berry. This is Roberta's Radio. Back on Roberta's Radio, continuing this conversation on hospitality with Greg Goldman, Aaron Arispe, and Kevin Lind in the studio. So welcome back, guys.
Hello. Hi.
All right, thanks. All right, awesome. Sorry. So we were just talking to Aaron Zimmerman from Rose's Luxury, and we were talking about, to a certain extent, the notion of staff dining out or staff coming into your own restaurant. And on the break, we were talking about 11 Madison Park. Now you have this, you know, beautiful Art Deco dining room. It's kind of massive and sprawling, 40-foot high ceilings, and the environment's gorgeous, but it can also be somewhat intimidating. And one of the things that we do, and one of the things that we strive to do on a nightly basis, is to immediately imbue this this sense of comfort in our guests, which is, you know, doubly felt for other members of the industry who are coming in, because there's a certain, like, you know, association with the accolades. But it's something that we strive to do on a regular basis, and we just do it by being genuine, being kind, and being warm and welcoming. And it's not easy to do. You know, a lot of people come in with a certain amount of discomfort, and that's what needs to be addressed almost immediately. Now, I know at Roberta's, for example, it's a little bit different. You kind of come in, it's a little bit raucous depending on what time of day you enter. And for me, when I first moved to the neighborhood, I was somewhat intimidated. I didn't necessarily know what the scene was. And now, fast forward 4 years, and you can find me here one or two nights a week sitting at the bar.
And what is it that draws you here? I mean, not to bring this conversation just about this place, but on a greater sense, what brings you anywhere, you know, on a regular basis, like being in the industry?
Well, it's a funny thing that you mentioned that. There's for me to return to a place takes quite a lot. You know, I'll try a lot of different places out just to have that sense of something new and have a new experience, see what else is going on in the industry, particularly in New York and our town. But what brings me back to a place is, you know, that sense of comfort that you find, you know. It starts with the food being delicious. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Sure. Like, if you sit down and it's not fucking delicious, like, you're not going to come back. And so that's actually what brought me coming back. I didn't feel comfortable the first couple of times. I guess it had something to do with not feeling cool enough or whatever, you know. But that kind of swiftly changed. And now I come back because I feel so welcomed walking in the door, you know. And then I can sit down at the bar and order things that I like to eat. I can hang out for a little while. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of understands the temperament. I've, to a certain extent, been catered to. But when I first started coming here, I wasn't even part of the industry, really. I mean, I had just, like, dipped my toe in and kept, like, a Sunday brunch job. It's kind of like, to a certain extent, I can imagine, or I could say that the comfort that you can get sitting down at the bar at Roberta's has, like, brought me a little bit closer to understanding what it's like to be sitting in a restaurant, what that can offer somebody.
Right.
You know, and that's what's more important. You know, the deliciousness is at the forefront, but you can offer so much more to someone who's just walking in off the street. And that's, you know, to tie it back to 11 Madison Park, that's what we're trying to do. You know, we're trying to give someone an experience that's really wonderful. It's, like, amazing. You know, it's not rare for us to hear on any given night that someone had the best meal of their life. You know, and I don't need that. you know, I don't need that often at all. Sure. What I really want is just a really comfortable, like, well-cooked meal with people that I care about. And that's, like, one of the reasons why I come back here all the time, you know?
And you said your experience changed. Do you think it changed because they, you know, staff here knew that you were also in the industry, and you think that affects, you know, your experience at all? Or you think they're just unrelated?
I do think it's related. I mean, it bred familiarity, for sure. I think empathy is super important in this industry. I think it actually has to be a driving force for any individual's success, working as a waiter or even as a cook or anywhere. If you don't have a certain sense of empathy, I mean, I say that my empathy button is, like, three sizes too large. You know, it's like it can be hit from any direction, and any grazing will have some type of reaction in me. And I think that's one of the reasons why when other members of the industry come into any restaurant, that familiarity and that sense of empathy for the other can make a much more comfortable experience.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's great at 11 Madison Park. You know, we don't necessarily have to treat a member of the service industry any different in our experience. The cool thing about it is we can just give them the experience, and the dynamic can change, and that will give them a different experience. You know, we can, we don't have to throw freebies at people is the point. You know, that's not really the idea, and that's not how you make someone feel really good. You make them feel really good because you care about them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, I worked at Roberta's for a long time, and I felt like a lot of what I was trying to do was convince people that despite the casual surroundings, we're not only very focused on service, but extremely focused on hospitality and you having a very good time. And I think a lot of the dining public might walk into 11 Madison Park and say, well, this place is so fancy, we're going to get lost in the mix. Or walk into Roberta's and say, this place is too chaotic, we're going to get lost in the mix. And both places making sure that that doesn't happen. I do notice when I go out to eat, I'm aware, very aware of what's happening around me. But it's that sense of empathy that allows me to say, you know, It's cool. I understand that the server forgot that part of my order, or, wow, it's been like, you know, 35 minutes since we ordered our appetizer and we haven't gotten anything, but I just saw that we sat at the same time as 20 other people, or, you know, all these sorts of scenarios play out in your head where you're like, okay, I get it. I get it. And it's just, to some degree, it's experiential learning, but to some other degree, it's just this regard, like, you're not going to be surprised by any scenario in a restaurant, basically, after you work in one for a little bit. And I think that that human, you know, element of understanding and of empathy is really, really a key thing.
Yeah, that heightened awareness really does, it changes my experience. A lot of times, probably for the worse. It bums me out, but there's nothing, I can't turn it off, you know? I definitely do try to sit in seats in restaurants or bars where I don't really see much going on. Not that I don't want to be part of it. I love that. That's why I'm in this business to begin with, but it's distracting, and it's hard for me not to pay attention. It's hard for me not to feel for the staff when things aren't going right, or customers being an asshole, or whatever it else might be. Even when, like, and there's mistakes, it's like what Aaron was saying, like, I can definitely, you know, brush them off a lot easier than I think most people can, just being in this business. But it's more my empathy is for them, because they know about the mistake, they feel it, and I know it's bumming them out too. You know, nobody wants to give, you know, poor service or have things go not as planned, but you know, it's part of the deal, I guess. I don't know, if I was a musician or a painter or something, and I was, you know, at a museum or a show, and it would change. It just changes the way that you view the world, I guess.
Sure.
100%. I think that's actually another reason why I have a little difficulty going to restaurants that are new or just opened. Because my initial reaction usually is I get more keyed in, you know, and I'm looking for systems and I want to understand how they work. And I think that's another reason why I feel so comfortable here, is because I've found a way to shut off. And that notion of shutting off is extremely difficult in this industry. Just like what you're saying, it's the empathy thing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't feel as bad necessarily for a table of four if something went horribly wrong. My gut instinct as an individual who's worked in this industry for a while is to feel terrible for the server and the team taking care of them.
Sure.
Because that's like, you know, that's a feeling that I understand and know, I've been through 1,000 times. You know, that's really hard. But to go back to something that, you know, Aaron brought up, you know, when you sit down at a restaurant, as a member of the service industry, you do, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And you brought it up in the last segment with your new, like, younger servers who are like, great, it's awesome, you know, people take care of me when I go to other places. But the other problem, that something that we face at 11 Madison Park, is you don't want that one table to be the only table that feels great over the course of the evening. You know, we have a term for it, we'll call it the soigné vacuum. You know, you don't want a vacuum to get created around table 62 or whatever it may be, and then table 61, 63, 64, and everyone else is all of a sudden really feeling it. You know, and that's a difficult thing to manage, you know, because you do want to make sure that your, you know, your staff or your peers or your friends or your, you know, industry mates have the greatest time that they can, but you also don't want to sacrifice your dinner service. You know, and that's something that's really hard to do as well, and I don't know how you guys handle that here specifically, or even if it's a consideration. Or
I pulled Aaron aside a couple times for that.
It was hitting a very awkward button in my memory bank here, because I could think of so many times where people would sit at this table right here outside of the studio, Two Tops, and I would just like stand there with my back to the rest of the room and talk to them for a good half hour.
It's hard, though. I mean, there's like, especially this kind of place, there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had, and, you know, these guys can drag you in and you get lost. But, you know, it's another reason why I like being a ghost when I go out to eat. And I don't want them to know. I just want a normal experience. So
I think a lot of the industry people that go out to eat also want that exact same thing. And, you know, we've all been to restaurants where, for instance, I went to a restaurant in Austin, I think sometime last year. And I was basically scared. I mean, I was dining solo, and the chef gave me this look like, I'm about to kill you with a ton of food. And he sent way too much food, and I was just like disgusted by the end, basically.
Oh, I remember you telling me about this.
You know, that's not the, I didn't feel welcomed. I felt challenged, you know, but I didn't feel welcomed. And I think, you know, trying to quickly read what type of experience a guest is looking for, whether they're, you know, whether you're expecting them or not. Because, you know, when we take reservations, I'm sure you guys probably Google the guests and stuff like that. So you get some background information. But a lot of times, you know, in a setup like Roberta's where there's no reservations, who knows who's going to end up in all the seats. But trying to read as quickly as possible what kind of experience the guest is really looking for. And I think that a lot of times that's a little bit... it's kind of a hard thing to do. It's like a careful balance to be maintained between making sure that you are showing your restaurant off in its best, you know, on its best footing, but at the same time, sort of working with them and really fulfilling what they're looking for.
I actually had a really funny, it was at a different restaurant a number of years ago, and a 3 Michelin starred chef from New York came in and he thought he was unnoticed. And I went up to him and I was like, "Chef, it's really great to see you." And he was like, "Shh." I got like the finger and the wag, and I was told that I wasn't to call him that, like in a really like kind way. He's like,
"Sure,
look, I'm just having dinner with my wife, man. Like, like, leave me alone." And I was like, "You got it, you know." And that was nice. At least I got the direct and immediate like answer to what was for me going to be a really exciting experience as, like, you know, just a server someplace. But
I mean, we usually get the opposite. I mean, it's well known in the industry. You get other industry people that come in and they announce themselves and they want you to tell this guy and that guy that they're here and this lady, and it's kind of unreal. I'm just so under thinking of the opposite of that, but you know,
yeah, tell so and so I said hello, or hey, is so and so working?
I don't know, there's a certain amount of excitement though too. I think it's something that we talk about a lot at 11 Madison Park, which is, you know, for us, it's super exciting when these people come to see our restaurant, you know? And I think even your own expectations need to get managed to a certain extent. Like, I get really excited when other people from the industry come because I get to, it's the same reason why you take your family to a restaurant where you work, you know? You get to show off what your hard work amounts to. And that's, for us, it's humbling too, you know? It's like, you want to come and eat here? Like, that's fucking cool. Yeah, you know, yeah, we're like super stoked about that. Like, that's a really awesome reality. So I don't know. You gotta find the toe of the line. Now I know if you ever come in, Greg, I'm not going to say hello.
Coming in on your day off.
You are not to make any contact.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, you are not to make, do not look at him in the eyes.
All right. Well, Kevin, thanks for joining us today. This
was
really
pleasure.
A lot of fun.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Aaron Silverman, for calling in from DC. That was cool. It's always great to get all these different opinions and not
Absolutely.
Just me and Aaron mumbling for a half an hour. I think I just mumbled that. Cool. Thanks, guys.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. I hope you'll come back again soon and do more of this. And again, for listeners that enjoy this programming, every single Tuesday, live, 7 p.m., archived on iTunes and Stitcher and any of the podcasting apps. Again, thank you, Kristen Berry, for the music. I'm Jack Inslee. We will see you all next week. Peace. When I'm sleeping
drew me down.